the Earth. But there were many technical difficulties to overcome. Holmes also needed, or at least would very much have appreciated, sophisticated gadgetry of a sort that could make very fine measurements from tiny samples, and as we have seen, it was all he could do to get a simple adding machine. So it was quite an achievement when in 1946 he was able to announce with some confidence that the Earth was at least 3 billion years old, and possibly rather more. Unfortunately, he now met yet another formidable impediment to acceptance, the conservativeness of his fellow scientists. Although happy to praise his methodology, many maintained that he had found not the age of the Earth, but merely the age of the materials from which the Earth had been formed. It was just at this time that Harrison Brown of the University of Chicago developed a new method for counting lead isotopes in igneous rocks, which is to say those that were created through heating as opposed to the laying down of sediments. Realizing that the work would be exceedingly tedious, he assigned it to young Claire Patterson as his dissertation project. Famously, he promised Patterson that determining the age of the Earth with his new method would be duck soup. In fact, it would take years. Patterson began work on the project in 1948. Compared with Thomas Midgley's colorful contributions to the March of Progress, Patterson's discovery of the age of the Earth feels more than a touch anticlimactic. For 7 years, first at the University of Chicago and then at the California Institute of Technology, where he moved in 1952, he worked in a sterile lab, making the very precise measurements of the lead-uranium ratios in carefully selected samples of old rock. The problem with measuring the age of the Earth was that you needed rocks that were extremely ancient, containing lead and uranium-bearing crystals that were about as old as the planet itself. Anything much younger would obviously give you misleadingly youthful dates, but really ancient rocks are only rarely found on Earth. In the late 1940s, no one altogether understood why this should be. Indeed, and rather extraordinarily, we would be well into the space age before anyone could plausibly account for where all the Earth's old rocks went. The answer was plate tectonics, which we shall of course get to. Patterson, meantime, was left to try to make sense of things with very limited materials. Eventually, and ingeniously, it occurred to him that he could circumvent the rock shortage by using rocks from beyond Earth. He turned to meteorites. The assumption he made, rather a large one, but correct as it turned out, was that many meteorites are essentially leftover building materials from the early days of the solar system, and thus have managed to preserve a more or less pristine interior chemistry. Measure the age of these wandering rocks, and you would have the age also, near enough, of the Earth. As always, however, nothing was quite as straightforward as such a breezy description makes it sound. Meteorites are not abundant, and meteoritic samples not specially easy to get hold of. Moreover, Brown's measurement technique proved finicky in the extreme and needed much refinement. Above all, there was the problem that Patterson's samples were continuously and unaccountably contaminated with large doses of atmospheric lead whenever they were exposed to air. It was this that eventually led him to create a sterile laboratory, the world's first, according to at least one account. It took Patterson 7 years of patient work just to assemble suitable samples for final testing. In the spring of 1953, he traveled to the Argonne National Laboratory in Illinois, where he was granted time on a late model mass spectrograph, a machine capable of detecting and measuring the minute quantities of uranium and lead locked up in ancient crystals. When at last he had his results, Patterson was so excited that he drove straight to his boyhood home in Iowa and had his mother check him into a hospital because he thought he was having a heart attack. Soon afterward, at a meeting in Wisconsin, Patterson announced a definitive age for the Earth of 4,550 million years, plus or minus 70 million years, a figure that stands unchanged 50 years later, as McGrane admiringly notes. After 200 years of trying, the Earth finally had an age. His main work done, Patterson now turned his attention to the nagging question of all that lead in the atmosphere. He was astounded to find that what little was known about the effects of lead on humans was almost invariably wrong or misleading, And not surprisingly, he discovered, since for 40 years every study of lead's effects had been funded exclusively by manufacturers of lead additives. In one such study, a doctor who had no specialized training in chemical pathology undertook a 5-year program in which volunteers were asked to breathe in or swallow lead in elevated quantities. Then their urine and feces were tested. Unfortunately, as the doctor appears not to have known, lead is not excreted as a waste product. Rather, it accumulates in the bones and blood. That's what makes it so dangerous, and neither bone nor blood was tested. In consequence, lead was given a clean bill of health. Patterson quickly established that we had a lot of lead in the atmosphere, still do, in fact, since lead never goes away, and that about 90% of it appeared to come from automobile exhaust pipes. But he couldn't prove it. What he needed was a way to compare lead levels in the atmosphere now with the levels that existed before 1923, when tetraethyl lead was introduced. It occurred to him that ice cores could provide the answer. It was known that snowfall in places like Greenland accumulates into discrete annual layers, because seasonal temperature differences produce slight changes in coloration from winter to summer. By counting back through these layers and measuring the amount of lead in each, he could work out global lead concentrations at any time for hundreds or even thousands of years. The notion became the foundation of ice core studies, on which much modern climatological work is based. What Patterson found was that before 1923, there was almost no lead in the atmosphere, and that since that time its level had climbed steadily and dangerously. He now made it his life's quest to get lead taken out of gasoline. To that end, he became a constant and often vocal critic of the lead industry and its interests. It would prove to be a hellish campaign. Ethyl was a powerful global corporation with many friends in high places. Among its directors have been Supreme Court Justice Lewis Powell and Gilbert Grosvenor of the National Geographic Society. Patterson suddenly found research funding withdrawn or difficult to acquire. The American Petroleum Institute cancelled a research contract with him, as did the United States Public Health Service, a supposedly new